Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, a senior producer at Lee and co-host of the program with Bruce Miller, editor of the Sioux City Journal and a longtime entertainment reporter. Bruce, welcome back. How's it going?
Now, we went through the Oscars. We're good. We are looking forward to the spring shows. We're good. I have watched all of Ted Lasso. I'm good. So yeah, there's a lot there that we've been able to peel off during the last few weeks. But you know, if I see a cocaine bear in the streets, I'm stopping.
I'm excited. I have not seen Cocaine Bear, and I will not until it's at least on TV for streaming purposes. But I am excited for Ted Lasso. That's the one show, because I feel like Apple TV Plus, they've got some good programs, but I can't pay for it year round because they don't seem to have enough at any given moment for me. Like, I like Ted Lasso. I like that space program where it was kind of the alternate history. Yeah, I really like that. So I've been waiting for Ted Lasso so I can resubscribe for about a month or two. Watch that. Watch For All Mankind. I still have to get caught up on that that Jennifer Aniston, the morning show.
Morning show, love that.
Yeah, I watch. Dream.
Look what you're missing. You should be spending all the money. You're rich. You can do all that.
If I was rich, Bruce, I probably would be doing something differently right now. But I'm not. I'm rich in knowledge. I'm rich in movie and TV knowledge. Spending my time with you.
You know. We don't need all that money because we have so much experience. That's where we're able to draw on that bank. And if you buy that crap, I'll tell you a little bit more.
I think we need a time machine, Bruce, for this episode. Like, I was looking locally for a DeLorean to see if I could whip something up because I want to go back in time because it feels like everything we're watching on TV now is going back in time.
A lot back in time. Yeah, and they're going back to the days when maybe politics wasn't the same as it is today. Right. You know, they're trying to kind of show us what was it like when X or Y was in charge? What did they do?
Right.
And how did they react? And it's interesting. I don't know if we're learning anything because I think our politicians are making the same mistakes they've always made. But it is fun to look back at these things. I love these ones that have great sets and costumes. I really like looking at that stuff because I think, what kind of hell are they going through to wear this junk, you know? And when you see something like The Great, which just turns it on its head and goes for the laughs, I enjoy it. It's fun. But a lot of things are coming up before the end of the spring. Tom Jones, they're doing a remake of Tom Jones that will be a little less user-friendly. Let's just say that Tom isn't the dashing rogue that he once was. And so that's an interesting take on things. And then we have Marie Antoinette, which is a kind of a spin on how that whole story played out, that the people who made it said that really Marie Antoinette was the victim. She was not treated the way she really should have been. And she was the victim of gossip in the court. She was like the first influencer who was canceled. It was one of those kind of things where
permanently.
They were out to get her. And so they did whatever they could. And in this new limited series that they have, you'll be able to see how the people are really, she wasn't that bad, but she was treated badly. And then we've had The Crown. Look how long we've been looking at the British dynasty and what they're up to. And how will that shift now when Charles is in charge?
Right. So you mentioned The Great, which that one's actually coming back pretty soon. Season 3 is coming back May 12th. They're going to drop 10 episodes on Hulu. And I feel like that's going to be one where I'm going to have to tell my wife, like, we got to take a couple days off because we're just going to crush through all 10 episodes back to, and they're quick ones too. I feel like that one you can crush through The Great pretty quickly. But I love that show because it's so irreverent. Everyone's smashing glasses on the floor and huzzah. And it's a little bit historically accurate, like 1%.
Yeah.
But it's so fun.
And very naughty, which I like naughty.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. The gentleman who created The Great also did The Favorite, if you remember The Favorite.
Mm, okay.
And that starred Olivia Colman. She won her Oscar for that.
And Olivia Colman
was in The Crown.
Right.
And I just talked to her. She's going to be in Great Expectations, another adaptation that's coming up. And she says, I have no interest in history. I am not one who wants to go back and dig out that stuff. In fact, she remembers being assigned Great Expectations when she was in high school. And she says, I don't think I even read it. I really don't. So I like the honesty that she brings to all of this, because it makes, I think, the character a little more believable. But yeah, but she was in The Crown. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, I'm sure, that I don't like that they keep switching out the cast, because I think they could do with some of that stuff. I think this latest cast, you know, the last one was really good. Mm-hmm. And now these ones, I'm not so sure I'm buying into it, but there you are.
Yeah, I liked, so, and it was weird too for me, because I didn't watch The Crown initially. When season 4 of The Crown came out, which was the second and final season with the second cast, my wife and I decided, let's kind of check this one out. So we went back and we crushed through season 1 and 2, then immediately went to season 3, which was very jarring when you go and look at the cast change, because we really liked, and we kind of grew to like that initial cast. And then it goes to season 3 and we didn't know kind of what to think of it. And I think it finally grew on us once we got about halfway through maybe the third season. It was I think ended up liking the season 3 and 4 cast the most, because I thought Olivia Colman really nailed a kind of middle-aged Queen Elizabeth, somebody who is no longer, you know, the young pup and is kind of settled into herself and taking charge and knows what she has to do. But you had Helena Bonham Carter playing her sister, which was kind of fun. And then I didn't even realize it until almost after the fact, but they brought back Dana Scully. Gillian Anderson played Margaret Thatcher. Right. And she was fabulous. It was so good. And the actor that was from the Game of Thrones, who played he was the member of the family that was blown up by the bomb, the boat bomb.
The Lord Mountbatten, or was it
Lord Mountbatten? Yeah, because he was Tywin Lannister in the Game of Thrones. So it was just, they had a really solid ensemble cast. So I absolutely loved it. I thought they had a really good young Prince Charles in that program. Right. I thought they had a really good young Princess Diana, but it didn't translate well when they jumped to season 5. I thought, like, it wasn't as jarring because it had been so long since I had watched seasons 4 and 5, but I'm not in love with the current cast.
Dominic West, isn't he Prince Charles now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think no, so. That was miscasting right there.
Right.
Right there is miscasting. But, you know, I get what they're doing. What's funny is that they kind of take a Jackie Collins approach to that whole royal world, and yet they're trying to play it as very Masterpiece Theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of down and dirty stuff that you think, is this really what happened? Or are you going a little too far on the edge here? So I don't know how accurate it might be, but I bet any money that the people who are in the royal family had a great time watching it.
I heard, I don't know if you heard this, but around the time of the first season, one of the queen's sons, I can't remember if it was Prince Edward, but they would go to her house, her castle, whatever she lives in, and they would watch it on like Sunday nights once a week.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. So they threw on the Netflix and watched themselves.
And then you would be like screaming at the TV. No, that's not the way it is. That's not true at all. Right?
I know. The one actor who I really thought has nailed the role in the newer season, though, Jonathan Pryce is Prince Philip. I feel like I believe him in that role. It feels like Prince Philip to me.
Well, and you know, isn't it weird that we know these characters, or we feel we know them because we've seen them in the media, we've seen them doing things. So you have a different approach. Whereas the ones that are from Catherine the Great's era, she could be whatever, you know, because right. we've enough about her that I don't know that that's true. But so it's, I think it's easier for an actor to play one that we aren't familiar with, but something but that really kind of grazes your radar. I think that's difficult.
Yeah. So that program has the final season coming up, season 6, which will maintain the current cast. I've read that it's scheduled to wrap photography sometime in May or June, and that Netflix, there's no release date, but Netflix has historically dropped that show in either November or December. So take that for whatever that's worth. We probably will see it by the end of the year, maybe.
Will they go up to the death of Elizabeth, or will they?
No, I thought the plan was to kind of bring it up to, you know, we'll obviously see the death of Princess Diana. And I think they have a young Kate Middleton cast. So we will see like William meet Kate in school, okay. But I don't think it goes any further than that. I think that was their point, was they wanted to kind of bring it up to sort of modern times, like where we would recognize the transition from that to almost the present day, but they weren't planning to bring it much further.
Couldn't you see though a standalone movie where they do the death of Elizabeth, where that's kind of, and then the transition of power? That'd be cool.
And just the drama, the Harry drama.
Oh, The Spare. I've been reading the book.
Have you?
Yeah, The Spare is very, very interesting, because you can see, first of all, the media is the devil. He has the media responsible for everything, which I find kind of like, boy, they really fed him the Kool-Aid, didn't they? Mm-hmm. But he does have an altered view of his importance, his place, and the family drama. Now, he tells a lot of things that are very fascinating, you know, about how bad the plumbing is in the palace, and how the sheets are repaired so many times that when you're in bed, you feel like all these holes that used to be in there are darned over and it rubs against you. I think, well, that's kind of information I would want. I'd want that. Yeah. I'd like to know that kind of junk. But then he gets into his military career, and single-handedly, he is like Liam Neeson here doing
flying into Afghanistan. And
yeah, it's, and you know, there are a lot of girlfriends mentioned that I never knew. I'd be going back, if I were British press, I'd be going back and asking them a few questions about, is this the way that book actually happened? Can you fill me in on this? Is this the truth? But he always is going about the paparazzi. And early in the book, he has this philosophy that he thought his mom was not dead, that she was, you know, just hiding out because she wanted to get away from all of it. And it took him going to the site of where she died to really come to a different kind of conclusion. But it is fascinating, because those people don't reveal their feelings for the most part. You never, we don't know what the queen was like. She could have been a big old lush, but you know, all we have to go on is that she has a purse, she likes corgis, and she always wore a hat. Right.
And horse racing.
Right. This is like, this is what we know about the queen.
Yeah.
So any speculation that a TV show does, it is what it is.
Yeah. I haven't read the book. I'm not really interested in reading it. I have not watched Harry and Meghan on Netflix, and I really don't feel like feeding that beast. You know, it's funny you mentioned the devil in the media, yet they have no problem using the media to their own advantage. It's only when it doesn't serve them right. But I think my problem is, it just comes off as very elitist and entitled on his part. I mean, I don't doubt that he's probably felt disparaged in some way. You know, we all know, going back to when even he was younger, they were referred to as the heir and the spare. So I totally get that. But you're living a very gilded life to begin with. I don't care about your problems all that much. It's a, you know, you can have a lot of problems. And I also think too, you're kind of burning bridges at this point. We all have people in our families who we don't necessarily like. You see them on Thanksgiving, you got your crazy uncle or somebody that believes in weird conspiracies or that UFOs are coming down to come. And you just kind of like, you nod politely and you move along. But in theory, he's really not that far removed from the monarchy. So like you would almost want to be like, let me just play it cool for the time being, because in, you know, what happens if Charles were to die and then something crazy like William and his family are flying off somewhere and the plane crashes, all of a sudden you're the king of England. So it's not, you know, it's one thing with his cousins who are like 14th in line and they're never going to smell the throne room, but he's actually still not that far removed from that position. Like just kind of let it roll out and then maybe, you know, years from now, but you know, it is what it is. Well,
there, I think Meghan and Harry are playing it like a reality show.
Yeah,
you know, they are. Trying to find all that kind of angst that we should get on their side, mm-hmm. and we should feel sorry for them. Look, I'm feeling sorry for nobody who has, you ring a bell and you get a meal. I have to scramble to get a meal. Yeah. So, and they don't have to worry about any money. They can buy whatever they want. They can get whatever they want. But I do see the kind of velvet handcuffs on them where you got to go cut a ribbon or open a store or something. And is that really a job?
Right.
And he acts like he's the only one who's seen the real outside world. He hasn't seen the outside world at all. He wasn't working at 7-Eleven. He wasn't doing, you know, some of these things that they act like, oh, we are real commoners. We are just, mm-hmm. we are... You know, and so it's fascinating. I enjoy reading this because it's so kind of deluded,
right,
about what the real world is. And then, as you said, putting the blame on the media when you don't really even know how grateful you should be to the media for carrying your water. Where would his side have been in this whole thing if Oprah hadn't said, hey, let's do a little interview, you know? And so he's naive. Naive right. is a better word than spare. But he brings up the spare aspect all the time in that book. I am just the spare. Oh, feel sorry for me.
He's going to beat the Queen's pony until its death on that one.
Well, and yeah, and I think they will go. They will go to the coronation because that's more content. They're just like influencers that have to have more content for their site. So they're going and they're not going to look happy, but they're going to go. And then they're going to bring the kids and then they'll say that somebody dissed them or Camilla didn't grab the kids and hug them like she should have, or it'll be some crap like that, because it keeps the monarchy going. As long as there's interest in that, nobody is talking about, let's get away from that. Let's not do that. Let's just make those some museums that we can send people through.
Of course. Now, some royal drama that I do enjoy, Bridgerton.
Bridgerton. Yeah.
You probably look at me like, Terry, you really Bridgerton? Yeah, I enjoy that. I kind of got roped into it with my wife and I've been sucked in. It's fun. It's just fun, good old drama.
I tried the first season and there were so many disconnects that I thought, you know, I can't do this because it's one more that I'm going to have to watch. And I did not buy the characters, but this is me. This is just me now. You enjoy, go do enjoy. But I, you know, when they lost their leading man after the first season, I thought this is going to really kill it. But then they got enough people there that each year they can have a new one who's looking for love, even though the plot seems a little familiar.
I also like, as a music buff, they have like the Vitamin. Yeah, the Vitamin String Quartet. And there's another group, too, where they take contemporary music but turn it into ballroom dance songs. Sure. So when I'm watching it, I'm thinking like, I know that song somewhere, and
that's
then it
Taylor
becomes
Swift.
A game. There's Nirvana. I can't believe you can dance to Nirvana.
Yeah.
So that's kind of some good old fun. But you know, it is what it is. That one's, I guess, they're still working on season 3. No release date. Again, they're kind of like changing over some of the cast because they're going to focus in on a different character or something, but it's not reality. But it's kind of got that drama.
With the newest, with Marie Antoinette, which is coming out this month,
mm-hmm.
they go back and they looked at all of the way that she was treated. And they looked at the books that were written about her and how people reacted to her. And they realized that what we know, the things like she says, let them eat cake, she never said that. Mm-hmm. Off with their heads, or any of those kinds of things that seem very kind of fictitious. It was all made up. And instead, she was just another person thrown into this royal world. She had no idea what she was doing. And they hated her because she was an outsider. She was not somebody that was picked from the inside. And she really kind of had to learn with her king. Because he was thrown into it when his family died. So they were these naive kids. This is probably more like Romeo and Juliet than anything else.
Yeah.
And they had to figure out, what do we do now? An interesting factor. I think we have the interview, but I talked to the two stars of the miniseries, Amelia Shule and Lewis Cunningham. And get this, he was never going to be an actor. He did a couple of shows in his college, right? And thought, oh, that's interesting. Okay, but he was all geared. I think he was a German major. And he was going to do something else. And suddenly he gets cast in this thing. And his co-star was actually serving as his kind of his advisor, telling him what he needed to know to be able to be in a miniseries. So it's fascinating how all of this world kind of opens up to certain people. And it's not unlike royalty, but you could be the star of a miniseries, Ter.
I could.
You know, all you need, and then the actress can lead you through it. So there you go.
I'll start looking for parts. The closest thing that I could think of with this series, Netflix did one a couple years ago called The Last Czars. Did you see that one at all?
I might have seen like an episode. I usually see the first episode of everything, and then after I'm done with that, I just bail.
So The Last Czars, if you haven't seen it, it's one of those shows where I'm not going to recommend anybody here listening to it to go see it because it wasn't that good. But the problem with it is once you watch one episode, you kind of feel compelled to finish them off because it's not that bad either. It's sort of in between. It's one of those that has, it's like 56% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's not terrible, but it's just not great either.
You need the feeling of completion is what you're looking for.
Exactly. And it was short enough. It was only 6 episodes. So it's kind of, I can kind of work my way through a mediocre series. But that one felt a little bit like this Marie Antoinette, where it's the czar, the last czar of Russia. It's how he gets married, the influence from Rasputin, and kind of what happened leading up to the Bolshevik Revolution, and then ultimately the family getting wiped out. And I think it might have, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I think it might have even began with, you know, did Anastasia actually survive it? Because there's somebody in the hospital who's roughly that age who claimed to be the daughter of the czar. And it was a fascinating look. And I think it provided some insight into the time period, and it was good, you know, as somebody who's a student of history like myself, and I like to think of myself, it was good to watch from that perspective. So I feel like I might actually hop into this one because it seems interesting enough to kind of capture my attention.
They shot at Versailles, so you actually get to see the locations, and they were shocked because they said there's a lot of show there. You can see the, you know, the grand ballrooms that they have, but they were living in like back rooms, basically. They didn't really have all that opulence around them at all times. I don't think that's true with, you know, all regal people. Mm-hmm. I think some of them do have the good stuff, but, you know, interesting, isn't it, that you can go, and I don't know that you as a tourist could go into those back rooms and see what it's like. But they got an opportunity because they were filming there, and they said, you want to see this room? And like, yeah, okay, let's go look. So that's, and this will be a three-parter too, Marie Antoinette. So I just know that it's 3 years that they'll be doing this. I think that's eight episodes or so for the first season. Then they'll do a second and they'll do the third. And so we don't get a head cutting until the end.
And then, and there's no cake because we've already ruled that out.
Okay. We are not having cake. No, unless they decide to do it at the end, you know, let's, and by the way, to celebrate this month's fundraiser on PBS, we're going to be having cake. You don't get the tote bag, you get a piece of cake. We're saying
make a $100 donation, you will send you a piece of cake.
You get the piece of cake. That's right. How it
works. All right, so let's cue that up.
Amelia Shewell is Marie Antoinette, and Louis Cunningham, who plays Louis, King Louis, are the stars of this. And they became very, very, very good friends. In fact, before I was interviewing them, they were just sitting on a couch and he had kicked off his shoes, and his shoes were like, they were huge. They had a huge heel on them. They were like, it looked like something you'd walked in a fashion show with. And I said, can I look at those shoes? Do you mind? He says, oh, my feet hurt so bad from wearing them, but they look cool. And he didn't have enough room in his luggage, so she brought the shoes with to do the interviews. And so he would have the look, but it wasn't like he was going to be suffering for his art. But that was kind of a little insight into their friendship. They really are close friends now because of this. And they're excited about going back. They say it's really cool to know that you have another job to go to. That's the best part of being in a mini series or a limited series, is that you're not just one and done. It's like, well, now we can go and see those same people next year and keep up, and then maybe look for some other work in the process. So anyway, they're lots of fun. Here they are, Amelia and Louis. This reminds me, and please don't think I'm crazy for suggesting it, but it's a very Harry Meghan kind of thing, where they're kind of the victims of all the people who just gossip around them. Did you see that at all, or am I just crazy?
It's been like brought up a bit in different reviews, and I'm not, if I'm honest, I hadn't thought about it at all before. I guess, yeah, someone new coming in to a big royal family. I don't know, I guess maybe. James kept saying that as well. James Purefoy, and I was thinking...
Yeah.
Maybe there are definitely some... But it wasn't something that I kind of thought of going into it.
But, yeah. Yeah, no, maybe you're right, but look, I haven't really thought about it as well. I mean, courts are difficult, and there's always intrigues, and, you know, like...
Rumors. Social media is kind of the whispering that goes on in the in the thing, and so it's like, oh, I wonder if that's...
And the pamphlets.
If you could make that parallel.
I mean, I didn't make the parallel, Harry and Meghan, but I did make the parallel that she was a victim of fake news and cancel culture, and of this whole campaign that was designed to destroy her and to support the revolution, you know?
When you look at all of the things that are written about her, do you say, well, what can I believe?
Yeah.
What can I, you know, because some people thought she was good, some thought she spent too much money, some thought she was fooling around.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you find her?
That was definitely a challenge for me, because I've, you know, been diving into the prep and reading all these books, and then we have our script, which is an entirely new take on her, and then I had this conversation with Deborah Davis, and I was like naming all the books I've read, and she was like, what, you've read the Stefan Zweig book? When I read that, I wanted to throw it against the wall. I hate that book. And I was like, okay, because Stefan Zweig obviously didn't think she's a great person, and you know, it's like the description of a mediocre character is like the subtitle of the script. So yeah, and this is when I kind of understood that I have to distance myself from all this and find my own Marie Antoinette, and we have the script, we have my work, and you know. Yeah.
Did you like her?
Oh yeah, I totally sympathized with her. Okay. Like, I didn't know, like, I had all these conceptions about her before I, you know, got this part. And then when prepping, I fell in love with her because her life was tragic, you know, like she's getting sent away from her home country. It's kind of child marriage. She has a husband who doesn't touch her. So she has to bear the humiliation of like whole Europe. And she can't fulfill her only job she has to do to, you know, produce this heir. Mm. So I do get why she, you know, distracted herself with the partying and the dresses and the wigs, because she's been in traumatizing circumstances, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love her.
I think it was What's really interesting is reading the history books and then seeing, yeah, as you said, how things are so different in different accounts, and thinking, okay, well, why is that? Why are perceptions changing? And then from that, you can kind of get a slight understanding of what you might want to portray within, you know, your character.
Could you relate it all to him? Or to is him? It like, yeah, do you say, oh, I'm not like that, I talk.
Yeah, I mean, on that level, not so much, but absolutely. I mean, I think I've 100% been in situations where kind of anxieties or fear takes over, and it's kind of a fight or flight type situation, yeah. And I just shut off. I was saying, the panel that we've just done, you know, I was almost kind of on zombie mode, automatic function, kind of just rolling out, and obviously I was speaking there, but it's that kind of...
Because it's stressful.
It's stressful.
You know? Oh, it is.
But at the base of it, I was just like, okay, put myself in his shoes. 15 years old, getting married, your parents have both died, your brother's died, you know that you're going to become king of this country that you really don't know much about, to be honest.
Yeah.
You've never seen much of it other than your massive castle that you live in. And the pressure that is put on you is enormous. And especially the pressure in the bedroom. It's like, how on earth could you ever perform sexually under such political stress and kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
excuse me for being stupid. Did you major in acting?
No.
So what was that career that you were studying for?
So the career, I have no idea. I studied German and philosophy at university.
He speaks German and French.
We have another show that could fit in. So there you go.
Right. But I always loved theater. And I did a bunch of theater on the side of my degree at my university. And I was of the mindset that, okay, maybe if I finish university and then I still really want to do this, I'll apply to drama schools in the UK and then go from there and see what happens. Or I'll get it out of my system and then go and do, I have no idea what. But I got so lucky, a casting director saw a play that I was in and then introduced me to my agent.
It's insane, huh?
Do you tell him this doesn't happen?
No, it doesn't. I told him I waited 17 years to get a job like this. And it's his first job, like a proper job.
Is that fair?
No,
is that
it's not
really
fair?
No.
But I had her. To guide me. Honestly, I can't. Well, I will say this to you, recorder machine. Amelia is one of the most insanely talented people I've ever met in my life. Two, the kindest. Three, the most impressive guider ever. You know, if I was lost, stressed, nervous, or just didn't really know how something worked, always explaining it to me, helping me out, pushing me along the right path.
She didn't say, stand in my shadow.
No.
And she would make everything vibrant and exciting and fresh and energetic, and, you know, we would play with everything. And
Wait,
it was these two
just
kids.
Like Marie Antoinette.
So does it make you want to do this then? This is the career? Yeah. So all that other stuff will just...
It's like a drug, you know, like once you, you know... Try it for once, you're hooked, like acting, doing films.
Have you both thought about what this could do for your careers?
Nope.
No.
I mean, because this will be a big platform. It'll be a big launch, and...
Yeah, but then again, you know, like, the market is so big, there's so much out there, so I'm trying to be, like, chilled, and, you know, it can go in either direction, and you just have to be grateful, you know, like, take it day by day.
Yeah.
What did you shave your head for?
For a film in Germany.
Did they shoot those scenes then when she is executed, Marie Antoinette?
No.
Because didn't they shave her? I mean, this is what I've read.
I don't know if they've, like, to be honest, my prep went up until the moment where we finished season one, because there was a lot to prep for. So she still has her head at the end of season one.
So we could have season two and it would be fine.
That would be fine?
Well, I mean, you have another season. You'd still be alive. It isn't like...
No, I'm still alive then, yes, yeah.
Okay.
It's a free season concept.
Do you think about, though, doing that last kind of moment of these characters?
It's really interesting. Deborah was very specific, and she said, in the history books, don't read up past a certain point.
Yeah.
Because these people didn't know what was coming for them, so why should you?
Obviously, yeah, so we didn't think about that moment, no.
But it's... In the first season, there are a couple of tiny things that are kind of foreshadowing what's to come. And that was a really interesting thing to think about. And also, the first season's really just within Versailles and in the court. So it shows how blissfully unaware they were of everything going on like outside and the reality of life in France for the normal people. And so yeah, it was kind of more interesting to play these roles with no concept of what was to come.
Did you think you could live this life? Did you say,
nope.
I really...
Absolutely
no, it's horrible. I mean, you come to a court, everyone, like, as Marie Antoinette, everyone hates you because you're Austrian. Everyone wants to get rid of you. And there are these, like, stupid 100-year-old rules. You have no privacy. You're always observed, always judged and controlled. And you have no life on your own, of your own, you know? Yeah. This is why she was so rebellious, because she wanted to, you know, be a human being.
Have you watched The Great?
Yes.
Do you see parallels between the characters, or...?
Yeah, I mean, but both of them, but I mean, Catherine just
that's played for humor,
yeah.
But it's still...
I mean, both wanted to change the court, and Catherine succeeded, and Marie Antoinette didn't. So I guess Catherine was just more lucky, you know?
Did you think she was pretty? I mean, I don't... Marie Antoinette, do you look at pictures of her? Because some you say... And then some, they say she was just beautiful. So how do you find what the visual is of her?
I honestly haven't thought about that, but what they do write about in literature is that she was just very, very charming, and she had this aura and this playfulness, and that was just seductive, you know? Yeah. That's what I've, you know, I've been trying to...
And the hunter? Are you...
The hunter.
A hunter?
No, I'm really not.
I'm a gatherer.
I'm not a hunter. Yeah, right. No. But also go back to the kind of like image of these people. They had their portraits painted. You never know. They could have done some 18th century Photoshop,
right?
On those things.
Yeah, for sure.
It could be worse. Right?
But who knows? I mean, I think
The idea of an arranged marriage, where, I mean, is that just so foreign to you that?
Yes.
Where do you find a way in?
It's abuse. It's not right. I mean, people in India would see that differently. There's a lot of arranged marriages.
I think what, even more than just being an arranged marriage, it was that they were children. I mean, I think of myself at 15, I was
I was keen.
I was just so unprepared for the world. And if you're forced to marry someone you don't know, you've never met. But I think, you know, with Louis, he's trying to weigh up. He's angry because he doesn't want to be king. He's been forced to marry. His brother is horrible to him. Everyone thinks he's useless. And then this woman comes in and he's kind of simultaneously beguiled in awe of her, but also doesn't want to do that because it kind of, you know, he falls in line with everything that has been laid out for him then. But so he's just completely drawn in every direction. No idea what to do.
How is it working in France? Is that...
interesting. The rumor is true. They do have wine at lunch. First of all, it's true. Like, it's, I've seen it. And then
maybe we'll get around to the rest of it.
The other rumor that they don't speak English is also true. Like, or hardly any English. So that's been a challenge, but then also beautiful for me, because, you know, like my hairdresser, who I spent like I must have spent like 400 hours in the hair chair, and he didn't speak any English and I didn't speak any French, but you can communicate non-verbally.
We're best buddies.
Oh good.
That sums it up.
And also we were living in Paris.
But that's,
it's not
amazing.
Too bad, is it?
Yeah,
we were all kind of 5 minutes away from each other.
Yeah,
we could, yeah, know,
we were living in Paris.
Do you have like go-betweens to help you talk to people?
What is a go-between?
Somebody who would translate for you.
Half of the cast were French, so that helped a lot. They managed to find the most incredible number of half French, half English actors. And, you know, they all live in Paris, but then have, you know, one parent who's English, so they speak perfect English with a perfect English accent. So they would help a lot.
But there were moments where they said, like, action in French, and I didn't realize we were filming.
Yeah.
No one translated in those, yeah. Moteur demandé is what they say. Yeah. What?
So how was
say
it?
Action.
Did your French get better then?
Yes.
A little bit.
Un petit.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was amazing by the end.
No, not by the end. I didn't have any time. I had 96 filming days, but I started to learn French after we stopped filming.
You say that, but actually your French...
She knew the good words, yeah. Right? She was able to say certain things. Then when you come to the next two years of this, when do you go back to do something on this? When would you film?
We don't know, but someday.
Someday.
Yeah.
Well, hey, isn't that the best?
Yes. Right?
Thank you so
much.
Thank
you so much.
Appreciate it.